Hello, welcome to Healing You, Healing Me. My name is Anna and I am your host. Healing You, Healing Me is the podcast that is designed to inspire, encourage, and motivate you. At this platform, we are about the business of doing while challenging you to do the same in any area of your life that needs change. You know, most recently, the world suffered a major loss in the person of Chadwick Boseman. Many of us loved him for his stark reminders of race relations. I loved him most because he made me feel just like royalty. He made me feel like Wakanda was my true home. What many of us did not discover until after his death was that he suffered from colon cancer, a cancer that begins sometimes with very little indication that it's even there. His story touched me deeply, not only because I loved and admired his work, but because one of my favorite people in the entire world, my beloved aunt and best friend, was diagnosed with this same disease 15 years ago. I don't want to give away too much of her story before bringing her on, but what I will tell you is that this was one of the most trying times of her life. She and her husband have fought this disease for over 15 years, and still to this day, one of the most beautiful things about their journey is that they have maintained their faith, that they are exactly where they're supposed to be, and they're doing exactly what they need to be doing at this time. So without further ado, I would love to introduce to some, present to others, and just share with the rest of you my favorite aunt and uncle, Chaplain Colonel Milton and Mrs. Naomi Johnson. Won't you give them a hand?
Diagnosis of colorectal cancer. But before we get into any of that, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and Milton?
Milton and I are longtime friends, even before we got married. We grew up together. Our families attended the same church, and so we've known each other all our lives. But when you're young, you know, you don't always realize the good things that are right in front of you. And so we each did our own thing, and later on in life realized that the good thing was right there all the time, right in front of us. And yeah. So we decided to become husband and wife and enjoy what God had already laid before us. It just took us a while to realize it. And so Milton and I got married in 2002 and have been living a life, a blessed life, a full life ever since then.
Wow, so you guys have been married 18 years, and I have to act like I don't know all these things because you aren't supposed to be my favorite people. You're supposed to be guests. So you guys have been married 18 years. That's amazing. So Milton, what was it about Naomi that just made you say, yeah, it's her?
Everything. Love and live.
something about being a quiet person. I don't know if y'all are like right there, but everything else, yes, I definitely get. You know, I remember when you guys started dating, and I won't tell all the family secrets, but I remember when you started dating, and I just remember thinking in my head, what took them so long? Because not only were you and Naomi friends all of your lives, but your mothers were friends for how many years before you guys even got together?
Exactly.
About how many years?
We asked ourselves the same question when we got together. What took us so long?
Yeah.
But our parents were in the church for, well over 50.
Yeah. So there is connection, that goes all the way back. So really, what I wanted to just say a little bit was that there wasn't much that either of you had to learn about each other in terms of family, connection, commitment, that sort of thing, because you guys grew up with each other. And what's so interesting is that Naomi is my biological aunt, and my grandmother had 6 children, and then Milton's mom had 13 children. And so there's a set of kids that grew together from the 60s all the way up to the 80s and 90s. I'm towards the end of that. And actually now we still have nieces and nephews that are still growing together. So take me back to the moment, because here you guys are married. Milton is still in the military. You guys are set for this life full of travel, seeing the world. Take me back to that moment when, Naomi, you thought something was wrong. What happened to you, and what were you thinking about?
Well, we were stationed in Fort Hood, Texas. And I've been having some issues with, I'm just going to be upfront, constipation.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been taking, trying to do things naturally. And at the same time, I was having this weird craving for something was missing from my body. And I was having these weird cravings. But anyway, I was having problems with constipation. And so we got orders to move to Fort Stewart
in Georgia, yes.
Stewart in Georgia. And I was looking for a job, because usually it takes 3-4 months, to find something in the area. So I've been searching for a position, and I found one. And so the job became open, and I had to move ahead of Milton. And so I moved to Fort Stewart, I guess it's about 3-4 months before you did. And when we moved there, I got in a little apartment because we were building a home at the time. So got an apartment, and I was still having issues with constipation and just feeling kind of lethargic and just not myself. And so I'd gone to the doctor a couple times. They'd given me prescription for this, prescription for that. And so I finally went to the doctor. She said, well, let's do a colonoscopy. And so by this time, Milton had already moved there. And so we had the colonoscopy. And it came back, and she said, right after the test, she said, we think it's cancerous. We're going to send it off to Walter Reed to be sure, but we're pretty sure that it's cancer. And so when we heard that, I remember, Milton and I looking at each other, and after we had left the hospital after the procedure, it just seemed kind of surreal, as though, wow, is this really happening? And immediately I thought, well, she said results came back and it was cancer. And the whole time, you know, there was, in my mind, my heart, my whole body, there was never really any fear. Because, you know, we both believe that God directs our lives. And we prayed about the situation and we knew that He would lead us in the direction that He would want us to go. And so, and we leaned on each other. You know, Milton was there. He's always been there for me. Milton is my rock. You know, he is the love of my life. I prayed for him before he knew I was praying for him. Before we got married. And so when we got married, it's like the Lord just answered my prayers, because He was everything. I wanted someone that would be the priest of our home, that could love me for the person that I am. And Milton are all, he's all those things. He always has been. So he was there from the very beginning, supporting me, praying for me, being there for me and whatever I needed. And we went through that initial disbelief together. And he's still here.
You know, what's so interesting is everybody has a different perspective about things that happen in life when they happen to a person that you love so much. Everybody brings their own perspective to the table. And I remember that was the second summer that Taylor attempted to spend with you. The first summer, she wasn't so successful because, you know, she was a mama's girl. But that was the second summer, and I think that what gave me the indication that something was wrong, because I always seem to have a sixth sense about you, is when you called me and said, "Hey, I need you to come pick up Taylor," and I'm like, "Huh? What?" And you didn't give me any explanation. You remained calm. You were cool. You were collected. And meanwhile, me and my brain is going, "Oh my God, what's wrong? What's wrong? Milton's not here. Did something happen to Milton? Oh no." And I'm trying to not let you see my fear. And I'm trying not to irritate or agitate you in whatever it is that you're dealing with. But I remember thinking, what's going on? So Milton, tell me, when you heard the diagnosis of cancer, I know Naomi talked about the fact that, you know, she didn't remember feeling any fear because of, you know, the dependence and the way that you guys believe in Jesus. What were you thinking? Like, honestly, what was going through your mind? Here you guys had only been married, like, by this time you'd been married how many years?
About 30 years.
Yeah, you were very early in, very early in. So what was going through your mind?
A whole lot of things, you know. I grew up with a father who would always say, "I'm not going to let anything beat me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to master it." Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that went through my mind. Mm-hmm. We're not going to let this beat us. Now, I can't say that I didn't have some fear, mm-hmm. because this was a total unknown.
Right.
I never walked this path before. In my family, we didn't have anybody up to this point who was diagnosed with cancer, and we had to work through it. And here I was into a new marriage with the love of my life, and, you know, the big C for a lot of people, you know, it's most of the time, a lot of times, 90% of the time, you know, it is fatal.
It is.
And so, but it was confirmed that Naomi had cancer. You know, I said, "We're going to make this work somehow. We're going to find an answer. We're going to get through it." And we started talking to a number of people. There was an Adventist doctor who was a member of the church that we attended at the time. And we went to her and asked for some advice on how we should go about getting the treatment. Because the initial surgeon that we talked to, he gave us a treatment plan, which was, you know, a very short treatment plan of how he would take care of her situation. So we went to this Adventist doctor, and we asked her if she thing she said was, number one, cancer is not your friend. Just remember that. It is an enemy, and it will kill you. So you have to treat it that way. You have to look at it like it is your enemy, and you have to get rid of it before it gets rid of you. And then she told us the story of her mother who died of breast cancer, and how initially they started her treatment plan without chemo radiation, and they got a little further into that treatment plan. The cancer spread, and by the time they decided to treat her cancer with chemo and radiation, it was too late.
Wow.
And her mom died. And she said to us, she said, so I'm telling you that to tell you, don't start treating this cancer naturally.
Wow.
Do chemo radiation right now. Because, you know, we started thinking too, maybe we should go the natural route. But we wanted to get some real solid advice. Thank God we had an Adventist doctor in the church that we attended who could give us that. And she had first-hand experience working with her mother. And she said, so I'm just telling you right now, don't take the route of natural, go the conventional route, get the medication, and if you want to do a natural lifestyle change, do that after the chemo, after the radiation, after the surgery. Mm-hmm. So we said, okay, we feel like that is the word of the Lord. And things started kind of coming together for us. I mean, it was very blurred at first. You know, we're going to make this work. We never had anything like this happen to us. Now we've got some advice. We feel like, you know, the road was beginning to be paved for us. And we felt like the Lord was listening to our prayers and leading us step by step. And so we started the chemo and radiation, and the doctors, the chemo and radiation doctors, told us that, you know, we only had like less than 2 weeks to make up our minds whether we were going to go in that direction. So we didn't have a lot of time because Naomi's cancer was stage 4.
Which we didn't know at the time.
Right.
So they didn't stage you. They gave you the diagnosis, but at that point they had not staged you and you didn't know what was what.
Right.
Now let me be really clear. You had colorectal cancer, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so that is a little bit different. Not much, but a little bit different from colon. Colon cancer really just affects your colon, but colorectal cancer affects the colon and the rectal area. And so one of the most interesting things I think about that particular cancer is that you can have the beginning of issues. You can have tumors and things beginning to form, and it will be no symptoms. You'll not really know anything is going on at stage 1 and stage 2. It's very rare that people feel symptomatic that early on and then find out that early on. So let me also say this.
Like I said, I didn't have any symptoms.
Right. Right.
There was nothing, you know, nothing else going on with me. I felt a little tired, but I figured that was just because, you know, I just moved. You're working a job. There's a lot of stuff going on. And I do want to interject here because I don't want people to get the wrong impression. That's the route we chose.
Right.
There are some who go the natural route and that works for them.
Right.
And everything worked out fine and they don't ever have to have chemo or radiation.
Right.
But that was the choice that we made based on how we felt and what we felt. We felt the Lord was leading us. That's not to say that the natural route is not the way to go. That just wasn't the route we took.
Right. And let me just piggyback on that a little bit. Every cancer journey is individual. And so in no way, shape, or form are we touting medical advice or offering you medical options. But because every case is individual, you have to talk with your doctors, you have to talk with your family, and you really have to look internally to figure out once you have all the information, what's the best decision for you, your family, and your personal situation? So, Milton, I know that Naomi was working a job. You guys had just moved across country from Texas to Georgia. That was packing up a house, driving a couple of cars, some dogs, just doing life military style. If I'm not mistaken, this was pretty early on when you first got to Georgia. So you were really still getting settled in to the base, into your duties, into figuring out everything you had to do. How in the world did you balance, oh, Naomi has cancer, against, oh, let me go pray with the soldier, gotta go take care of the soldier? How did you find a good way to balance everything that was on your plate at that time?
Well, you know, it was difficult.
Yes.
That wasn't easy. You know, it wasn't something that we just did. The good thing is, I had just come back from Iraq 2 years prior.
Yeah.
Had gone to Iraq and had been gone for about a year. And looking back on that experience, that was a tough year for both Naomi and I, because that was like our second year marriage. You know, actually, I don't think we'd been married quite a year before I went to Iraq. Yeah. And I got back, and we went to Texas for my family life chaplain's training, then we went to Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Diagnosed with colon cancer. Well, looking back, the year I spent in Iraq, which was a very tough year,
yes,
the Lord was already preparing us for this cancer journey ahead. The year I was in Iraq, Naomi spent months just learning to live without me and being alone. Although she had lived alone 12 years before we got married, this was the new kind of being alone. In her place.
It was military style being alone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And using the resources of people you don't know right around you to make do with what you have.
Right.
So when we got to Georgia and she was diagnosed with cancer and I was just into a new job, she had already learned to live independently. So I could go to work and continue solidifying things into my new position and not have to worry a lot about her for half of the day, which was a blessing.
Yeah.
She hadn't had that kind of you know, independence, and if she hadn't had that kind of previous experience, it would have been more difficult.
Absolutely.
She had already built up a foundation of just kind of being alone that helped us to get through that experience initially. And we would take Naomi to the chemo radiation clinic in the morning, and she would have to be by herself from about 10 o'clock in the morning until I would get back home at about 5 or 6. And she was okay. The chemo and the radiation would make her tired and, you know, would kind of put her out. And I would bring her home from the clinic every day, because we would go to the clinic every day for like 6 weeks. And I would put her to bed, and she'd be resting for 4, 5, 6 hours. And she'd get up, get a little something to eat, and then I would be home. But just having to live independently for that whole year of being in Iraq, I think, you know, provided somewhat of a foundation to kind of help us when we got through the initial stage of her cancer.
Right. So I know initially you guys didn't mention anything. At what point did you decide to tell our families?
After we got the confirmation back from the doctor that it indeed was cancer and that it was colorectal, then we decided, well, we have to tell our family, because I'm going to have to, you know,
just skip over fit? First of all, let me just interject a little something right here. There is no such thing as a family meeting in our family. So when my mother, your sister mama, called and said, Naomi and Milton are coming home, we are going to have a family meeting, immediately, I couldn't talk to anybody because you were the person I always talked to. Immediately, I said, who are they playing with? Who? I knew something was wrong. I know something is wrong. Family meeting what? So, family meeting. Go on.
Let me say this. I think the family was positioned to hear that we were probably having a baby.
Well, I knew it wasn't a baby. Now, I don't know what the other folk were ready to hear, but I knew good and well.
I don't think that initially the family thought it was going to be something negative. I think initially the family thought, okay, this is something positive. This is not bad news. They're coming to tell us something good, whether it's a baby or whether they're going to a new duty station or whether they've, come into some big blessing. I think the initial word that we need to have a family meeting and we're coming to talk to you, I think the initial feeling was this is not going to be bad.
Well, yeah, because we have to.
Yeah, I think when Naomi told them, I could see the difference in everybody's faces because they weren't expecting that. They were expecting something positive. Okay, not to be nice.
One brother had to be told, well, yeah, you need to come because this is serious. Because he thought, well, am I going to come to a family meeting? What kind of family meeting? And so when they all got to the house, and that was Mama and actually just one siblings and nieces and nephews and sister-in-law. Because two brothers I had to tell on the phone because they were out of the area. But anyway, so when I told them, it was not easy because I was nervous about saying it. I didn't want to get emotional in saying it, especially with Mom being there. And so, but I said, God went to the doctor and just found out that I have cancer. I'm going to have treatment for it. And it's like,
whoa, wow. Really?
Whoa.
I really think it was going to be that.
But I'll never forget the thing that was most difficult for me was, Mama stayed. She tried to stay strong, but she walked back in the bathroom and she teared up and started crying. And that was hard to see her. But, she said, I believe God's going to answer prayer today. I just know you're going to be all right. And, she was upbeat from the beginning, but it was difficult saying that and then, seeing her reaction. But family was, everybody was just super supportive, behind me, what do you need? My sister came and stayed with us, your mom. Mm-hmm. And stayed with us for a little while. I initially went through the radiation, and she was there helping. Everybody was just supportive, calling to check on me. And Milton's family, the same. Like I said, because, we all grew up together, and his sister and I, Pearl, were roommates in college, and, it was just support. Nothing but an outpouring of support and love from both sides.
So Milton, on the flip side, what was that discussion like telling your mother? Because your mother knew how you felt about Naomi. What was that like for you having to tell your mom?
Yeah, my mother at that point had already lost 3 boys.
Yeah.
She had already been through, a kind of turbulent life with loss and with death. initial response was, you know, there's nothing too hard for the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to put this to the Lord in prayer. And everything is going to be all right. You know, she always had this way of saying, you know, I just believe everything is going to be all right. She was full of encouragement and was very upbeat. And she's always seeing Naomi like her own daughter, you know. And she prayed with us. And like Naomi said, she was very, very supportive. You know, one of the things I missed about my mom is that, you know, she would call us a lot. And she would talk to us for hours on the phone. Sometimes we'd be traveling from
the stay on the road.
Oh, she'd talk to hours. And would pray with us. And when we told her about this experience, that was her initial response. You know, we're going to pray about this. Everything is going to be okay. And we are going to trust the Lord to handle this. Nothing is too hard for the Lord. And you know, I've always been of the mindset that I want to hear it all. You know, I want to hear the plus and the minus.
Mm-hmm.
Both sides.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times people want to give you the good news. I want to hear both the good and the bad. You know, give me the worst so that I can start preparing myself for what could possibly happen. It may never go to that extreme, but give me the worst so that I can start positioning myself. And, you know, I have to say that when we gave this to Mama, you know, her thing was, I mean, she went right to the negative and the positive, and she wanted to hear it all. And I've always been that kind of person, too. Maybe I learned, you know, that let's get both angles, let's get the whole circle, and then let's take the whole thing to the Lord in prayer. But that was her response, you know. God, nothing's too hard for the Lord, and the Lord has this under control. So let's take this whole thing to Him, and then let's wait and see what the Lord will do.
So had you already begun? Oh, I'm sorry, go.
But what I started to say is, you know, we had the whole picture of what could possibly happen, but at this point, I must say, at this point, when we started telling our family what happened, at this point, we really needed the amount of recovery. Yeah.
So
we
got
it. This is where we read, at this point, you know, before we got to the family, we had been dealing with this for probably a week or two. And so, yeah, because we called Loma Linda, we called several other cancer treatment facilities. We'd gone back and forth trying to get all the advice we could give. We pulled out the books, started reading. You know, we were doing our research night and day, just trying to figure out what could we do on our own to help us.
Right.
And by the time we told the family, we had been immersed into a lot of information. We'd been immersed and talking to a lot of people so that we could get the full circle. I mean, we actually had before us what could ultimately happen.
Right.
And what could ultimately happen is that we could die.
Right.
We had already sat down, talked about that, and discussed that, and, you know, just went back and forth, brainstormed about how to handle that. And we came back from the worst that could happen to the positive side. God's got this. We're going to ask Him to heal you of this. We understand where this could take us, but let's ask the Lord to not let that happen. And when we got to the family, at that point, we needed to hear a lot of encouragement. And we got a whole bunch of it.
You know, what was so amazing to me during that whole time was that you guys got stationed in Georgia, 90 minutes away from your core. And I don't know about for anybody else, but I know that just looking back, I just know how helpful that was for us as a family as a whole, because we were able to come down. We were able to do more than just call. It wasn't like we had to get on a plane and fly. It was just a matter of two or three people saying, hey, let's go in the car and run down. It was a two-hour trip, 90 minutes. We were there 2 hours back, and then we could spend the whole day and cook a meal, bring some encouragement, make you guys laugh. Milton loved taking us on drives and showing us parts of where you all were in Georgia. So just in retrospect, I just am so thankful for that part of the journey, because I can't imagine how difficult it would have been for you two. And then on the flip side of that, how difficult it would have been for all of us had we not been able to just reach out and touch you whenever we felt that urge to do that.
Now, I must say that, you know, I grew up in a family that was very close, and so is Naomi's family, and I love that. I've always enjoyed the closeness and camaraderie of the family, and we try to maintain that to this day.
Mm-hmm.
I also, again, having been raised by my daddy, I also really, really love it and enjoy it when I am able to take care of things on my own. So, well, we went through this experience, and, you know, we were close to family, and family would come, you know, support. I always like to be able to say, I got this.
I remember.
You know, I don't know. Fred Johnson put that in me, and it's a very strong inward kind of feeling and process that I like, and you know, I felt very prideful in the fact that, you know, I was able to say that, you know, I can handle this.
You did a good job.
Thank you for your help, but I can handle this.
And you know what? Again, on the flip side of that, we had to figure out a way to give you that space, because in our family, Naomi is the beloved of everybody. Like, she is the common denominator of everybody. And so there were times, I'm sure, that it was difficult for both sides to understand you needing that space to be able to do it and us having to relinquish that space. It wasn't that, you know, we didn't trust you as our husband or that we didn't think that this was a perfect match, but this was cancer. This was cancer. And everybody in our family comes away with the same thing that you have in your head. Oh, no, I can do this. We got this. No, we can do it. And so just imagine being in a house full of people and everybody's thinking, no, I got it. No, I got it. No, I got it. Yeah, it could be a little stressful.
which is why sometimes I get it before anybody else gets it. If she needs something to eat, I go ahead and cook it before anybody gets it.
Definitely. So this, I imagine that this has changed you, this diagnosis has changed you, and what I kind of want to talk about at this point is, you haven't had one diagnosis of cancer. How many diagnoses have you had at this point that you've actually, three separate diagnoses from, what, 2005 until... Yeah, 2005. So the first diagnosis was 2005, and you went into remission. I remember celebrating. And then 2012, bring, bring, bring.
Yeah.
Yeah. So take us back to that moment and just kind of tell us, you know, what were you experiencing leading up to that second diagnosis? What happened and what made you think, I need to go check and see what's going on?
Well, after the initial diagnosis, chemo, radiation, a couple surgeries, which I did. Mm-hmm. I was in Korea. And so we were in Korea for a year and a half. And during that time, I still had my PET and CT scans. Well, after that tour in Korea, that's when we were stationed at Fort Rucker. And so we got back to the States, and it was time for me to have another PET and CT scan. Now, it's been 6 years since I'd had, with me being in remission, so I went to Georgia, to my oncologist in Georgia, did the PET CT scan, thinking, oh, okay, it'll be fine. It's been fine for the past 6 years, no big deal. And we were rushing because we had just moved back to the States. And so I didn't stay for the consultation. I had the PET CT scan, and then we didn't go back the next day for the results because we figured, well, they'll call up and tell us everything fine, no big deal. We left and went back to Fort Rucker in Alabama. Mm-hmm. And so I got a call 2 days later from the oncologist saying, Ms. Johnson, you did not stay for your consultation. I said, yeah, I know. We were kind of like in a rush, and we figured everything would be okay, and I checked back with you. He said, well, you need to get to see an oncologist right away. Your cancer is that. And
it's that. So he just blurted this out on the phone just like that?
Yeah, because he needed me to go to the doctor right away. Not only was cancer bad, because keep in mind, when I had the initial treatment, it was diagnosed as stage 4 when they went in for the surgery because it was in my liver, lung, and lymph nodes.
All right, so let's just unpack this a little bit. So the diagnosis was colorectal cancer stage 4. And in 2005, when you had that initial diagnosis, it was lung, liver, lymph node. Got it.
Right.
Okay.
So they went in and they removed cancer from all those areas. I had a temporary ileostomy for a year and a half. Then I had the reversal surgery, and then I had to readjust to that life. And
so wait, let's just, for the people who may not recognize the medical term, ileostomy is the bag on your side.
It's a bag. It wasn't a colostomy bag, it was an ileostomy bag. Mm-hmm. And that was temporary. I think the ileostomy was temporary. And so I had to wear that bag for a year and a half. And then after the year and a half, the doctor said, you know, thinks he could reverse it. I would have enough muscle tone in that area so that he could do that. And so he was able to, the surgeon was able to reverse and reconnect. And so I had to adjust to that life as well after the ileostomy, which was really, that's a whole podcast in itself. Right?
Now tell the miracle about them being able to reconnect so that you could not have to have the bag for the rest of your life.
Yeah, because the general surgeon that we had initially said, okay, Ms. Johnson, you'll have the treatment, the chemo, the radiation, we'll cut it out, we'll give you a colostomy, and you'll live with that for the rest of your life, and you'll be good. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Milton and I were like, okay, you know, at the time that I was diagnosed, I was 45.
Right.
Fairly young to me.
Absolutely. And
we did not, you know, it was not normal for a 45-year-old to have a diagnosis of colorectal cancer. Normally, right. It was an older individual.
Right.
Did not have a family history of that. So that's why it was really ultimately a shock. But when he said, well, you know, you have a colonoscopy, colostomy for the rest of your life. We're like, let's get a second opinion. You know, we need to talk to our oncologist and find out, is that our only option? Mm-hmm. You know, if that's what the Lord wants for us, then okay, but let's explore this. So we did, and we found out that there were specialists, colorectal specialists, which we didn't realize. So we did that. And so he went in and he was able, and again, we felt like this was nothing but the Lord who's been directing our paths throughout this entire process. And he was able to cut away that cancer, give me that ileostomy, a year and a half, to give my body time to heal from the surgery that I had, the radiation, and the chemo, and then I had that reversal surgery. When I had that reversal surgery, now I was able to use, not have the bag and to be able to go to the bathroom like anyone normally would. It was an adjustment, I must say, because, you know, I still have to be careful of what I eat and how much I eat and how often I eat. And some, you know, that's not always explained to you.
Right.
When you have surgery, they tell you, oh, we're going to do this, you push back, yeah, you'll be fine. But they don't tell you the specifics, like, okay, you need to watch what you eat. You may not be able to eat as much as you used to eat. You may not be able to eat this or that. And I had to, within a 2-year time period, figure that out on my own. That was 2 years that was really kind of tough, because there were times when I wished I had that bag, because I was going to the bathroom so often, so frequently, and I didn't know I would eat and it would come right out. It was a total.
So at this point, what dietary changes did you implement? Like, I know that there was a discussion at one time about, you know, what was the natural route and what was most beneficial and what was going to work best in your situation. At what point did you try to incorporate more naturalistic things to combat this cancer?
Well, you know, in reading up about it, we realized that I needed to take sugar out of my diet when I was going through the treatment and all that.
Now, is that sugar in your cereal? Is that a little bit of sugar in your coffee? What does that mean?
That's no added sugars, no white sugars, no any kind of sugars. So I needed to watch everything that I ate. Everything had sugar in it.
Right.
Ketchup.
Right.
I mean, just you things that you wouldn't normally think would have sugar in it had sugar in it. And so I didn't put any added sugar in my diet. I didn't have any sugar in my tea or drink or anything. Hot chocolate, that was out because it had sugar in it. So
basically, you went from being a chocolate milk made with cream, Hershey kind of girl, to having to come away with a cup of tea and no sugar.
Well, I didn't even bother with it. I can have sugar. Why bother?
Were you angry at any point? Were you angry at all of these things that were happening to you at any point?
I was angry when I had to take sugar out of my diet, because keep in mind, I was a chocoholic. I was a sugarholic.
Yeah.
Sweet. I would eat sweet before I would eat a meal.
Yeah.
You know, I get dessert before I eat the meal.
Yeah.
That's just how I live. When I was young, I would eat frosted flakes because the flakes had sugar on it, and then I would add sugar to that.
Yeah.
Sugar out of my diet. Yeah, I was upset because, you know, Milton supported me in that, but he didn't have to take sugar out of his diet. So if he got to eat something with sugar in it, I'd be cutting daggers.
So Milton, like, how much did you try to protect Naomi? Like, would you go have your cinnamon bun at work and come home and be on the straight and narrow with Naomi? How in the world did you deal with that? Like, the emotional things that she was going through and your own feelings. What did you do?
Well, yeah. You know, every now and then I would slip, but, you know, I didn't want to make it hard for her.
Yeah.
And I didn't want the journey to be an uphill battle because of me putting stumbling blocks in her way.
Right,
and
right.
So, you know, I've never been that big of a sugar eater anyway. And so that wasn't really a big, you know, problem for me. But when I would have, you know, sweets, I would try my best not
Now, was sugar the only thing that you had to take out of your diet? Or at this point, what was your diet looking like? What had you changed? What had you implemented? What had you taken away besides the sugar? What was your diet at this point?
After, you know, reading up, I tried to limit. I took red meat out of my diet.
Okay.
I tried to limit any meats that I ate. So it was mainly trying to do fruit, doing my own juices. It's natural. Yeah, no fried foods. And then after I had the surgery, I realized I couldn't eat big portions. I had to eat smaller meals a little more often. I had to limit the dairy in my diet. I had to limit a lot of things. You know, dairy is limited. I needed more fiber in my diet, but I had to limit that because I still couldn't eat a lot of any one thing.
Right.
And certain foods that I ate, if I ate it more than one day, then I was going to have an issue. So a learning process, 2-year learning process during the time, trying to figure out what worked, what didn't work, what I could eat, what I couldn't eat. There were days when it was difficult. There were days when it was an adjustment because keep in mind, this was 45 years of me eating the way I wanted to eat.
Right.
Not having to limit myself, and now I have to limit myself. You know, it was a learning process. It was. So a little adjustment. It was an adjustment. But, you know, throughout the process, and after I figured out what I could and couldn't eat, during that time I was still trying to work and was wondering if I would ever be able to go and sit in an office again. And, you know, eventually I was able to. But when that second diagnosis came, it was the second diagnosis that was in my liver, lungs, and the stomach area.
So this is now 2012. So let's just recap a little bit so that we're really clear. 2005, first diagnosis, colorectal cancer, liver, lymph nodes, and lung. Second diagnosis, 2012, liver, stomach area, and
lung
again.
No,
so,
first diagnosis, it was not in the lung. It was just the colorectal area.
Oh, that's right. Nose, yeah,
and
right.
And liver.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. So first area, no lung.
He suspected that it had traveled to the left lung, but they weren't sure.
Okay.
Yeah. So
wow.
That was liver, you know. No, stomach, lung, and liver. Yeah.
Stomach, lung, liver. Yeah.
Milton is looking at you like, I said what I said. Naomi is a therapist. Milton is a colonel, a chaplain, and a family life. What's the correct term? I want to get it all right. Family life chaplain, which means that you deal with every aspect of family life. And one of the things that I have learned just by watching your journey in the military is that the best military couples work together, work best when they work together. And so what I have noticed is that you always incorporate Naomi in what you're doing. You guys write courses together. You design, workshops and things together. And so your lives were really, really, really intertwined, not just in marriage, but also in your respective careers and then your careers as a collective whole. And I think that's really important to note. We all know that counselors and therapists, social workers, sometimes carry a little extra burden. So you both are dealing with that from different aspects, and then you're joint things together. Milton, at what point are you thinking maybe, what are you thinking about your career at this point, and what are you thinking about Naomi's career, and what is it that you want Naomi to do at this point after diagnosis number 2?